So I've done something slightly different for number time this week, which is I'm going to tell you a bit of a story to begin with, and then I'll give some context for the number that you've got to guess.
Okay.
Let me try that again, because that's not how it works. So
I've done
something slightly different for number time this week, which is to completely mislead you and lie to you.
just completely lead me down the wrong path here. Setting me
it's
up
misconception
to fail.
Corner. Let's try that again. So,
do you want to hear the music?
I've done something. God. Welcome to the Gaps of Knowledge podcast. I'm Will. I'm a historian and I know nothing about geography.
And I'm Reese, and I'm a geographer that knows nothing about history.
And this week I go flying far away. I cruelly kill off some English kings and then I'll strip off to my underpants.
And today I flap the ears of elephants, cause an arachnopocalypse and go walkies with junkyard dogs.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Who goes first this time? Is it my turn?
I think it's your turn.
I think it might be. Okay.
Okay. Shall we try and get going on something then?
Sure. Yeah. Shall we go straight into Misconception Corner?
Yeah. So let's go straight into Misconception Corner. And I think this time, Will, I think it's you to begin with the history stuff. So fire away. Lure me into Misconception Corner and make me look stupid.
Well, we're going to return to a previously covered topic, actually, because we are ourselves guilty of spreading a misconception here.
No.
This comes courtesy of one Brigadier Brackets retired E.M. Flint, who just so happens to be my dad, who pointed out that we have spread a misconception corner in our very first episode. Balloon Man is a complete misconception.
Balloon Man?
Do you remember the story of Balloon Man?
Oh, Balloon Man was... Oh my God. No, I don't. You might have to remind me of that one. I can't quite remember it. It's about 5 months ago now.
So we were talking about dumb ways to die, I think, and the Darwin Awards.
The guy that attached balloons to his chairs and floated up to try and hover.
And that bit's all absolutely correct. But the misconception comes in the fact that he didn't actually die whilst on the balloon ride. He survived it.
Oh, really?
Fantastic end to the story. Yeah. So my dad, when he heard this episode months ago, pointed out to me, actually, you've got that wrong, because what happened was, this is in 1982. The guy's called Larry, which of course he is, and he's from America, which of course he is.
Yeah, those two things match up perfectly. It's very be nothing much else. So.
And his story's quite interesting, actually. He'd always wanted to fly. He loved aeroplanes ever since he was young, but he had really bad eyesight, so he could never become a pilot. And so he joined the Air Force and he served in Vietnam. But when he came back, he realized that he would never fulfill his dream of flying. And so he came up with a plan. And his plan involved 45 helium balloons, a lawn chair, a box of sandwiches, a radio so that he could contact aeroplanes, a pellet gun, and of course, a can of beer. And so the idea was he's going to float up about 10 meters, so about the height of a decent sized building, and then pop the balloons one by one in order to get down to the ground. But as the Darwin Awards website puts it, things didn't work out exactly as planned. And what happened was he instantly flew up to about 5 kilometers high in the sky, which is about half the cruising altitude of a modern day jet. So he's a long, long way up.
Oh my God.
Of course, as I think we spoke about before, he realized he couldn't pop the balloons, because if he starts popping balloons, he falls 5 kilometers straight back down to the earth. So he floats around for a bit. And by a bit, I mean over half a day. It takes him 14 hours to come to his senses of just floating around Los Angeles.
Quickly here. He must be pretty thirsty. He barely brought one can of beer.
One beer in 14 hours is not adequate. No.
No. And the other one is, I mean, he would have had to have gone to the toilet at some point as well.
Well, I think we can presume that the minute that the balloons released and he flew up into the air, he just shat himself instantly. So I don't know if that's going to be a problem for the rest of the flight.
It's just unbelievable. And the other question I have as well for this is, he said, how many helium balloons? 46.
45 it was.
45 helium balloons. Like, is this guy pretty light? I don't know the range, how many balloons you would need to float up in a chair. That's what...
Yeah, I have the statistic here, but unfortunately the statistic doesn't mean anything to me. Each balloon, they're big weather balloons. They're not party balloons. They're balloons that you use for sending up devices to monitor the atmosphere.
Okay.
And so they hold 33 cubic feet of helium. Now, I don't know what that means. 33, that sounds like a lot of helium to me.
That's a lot of helium. I'm trying to think. I don't know what is 33 cubic feet, but I know the size of a weather balloon, and they're pretty big, and they can carry a lot of things up, and a decent weight as well. So actually, now I've got the image of the party balloon idea out of my head, and I've now got the weather balloon idea in my head. I think I can kind of see why 45 balloons might well be enough to lift the guy up.
To lift you up, yeah.
How did he land? Do you have that information? Well,
yes, I do. Yeah, so he was floating around above Los Angeles, and at one point he did, of course, fly over the airport, which was not ideal. But he just carried on floating beyond the airport and realized either the balloons are all going to go at once because the helium will eventually seep out, or I just float forever. So he did shoot a couple of balloons, but he managed to shoot them, to shoot few enough that he would just slowly descend. And he did just slowly descend back down to Los Angeles.
Right into duty free.
Yeah. Well, funnily enough, he didn't stop causing havoc on his way down, because where he lands on a power line and completely causes a blackout in a bit of Los Angeles for like half an hour.
I'm sure the police would have been really happy to hear that information. Like,
the police are there on site when he lands. And when they arrest him, they say, "We're not entirely sure what you've actually broken, which law you've actually broken here, but you've definitely broken some law, so we're going to arrest you just in case."
Yeah, I was thinking that. Well, I suppose flying over in sort of an airport is probably one violation, because I know you can't even fly a drone within however many miles away from an airport. So exactly, that might be one.
Yeah, and that is what he gets fined for. He gets fined $1,500. And when asked why he did it, his response was fantastic. He said, "A man can't just sit around."
No, you have to float around.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, do you want to know how he died? Because it's not funny. It's quite sad, actually.
Oh, go on. Tell me how he died.
Yeah, he hiked into the forests around Los Angeles and shot himself at the age of 44. Yeah, he never, I mean, his balloon trip was a literal and a metaphorical high point of his life.
My question is, the reason why he shot himself, did he have such a high-pitched voice for the rest of eternity that he couldn't stand anymore?
He didn't float around on the helium within his own lungs, that's not. So the misconception is, Balloon Man did not die from his balloon trip. He survived the balloon trip, and therefore he doesn't have a Darwin Award. He has an honorary Darwin Award, which is even rarer than the Darwin Award.
That means you do something which would have killed you on normal circumstances, but you lucked out. You fluked it through.
Yeah, I guess it's like the Victoria Cross, but for idiots.
Oh, I'm sure that's quite a prestigious award to have, actually, the honorary Darwinian Award.
That if you get it, that goes top on your CV, surely.
I think that's like the first thing I write on.
Yeah. Maybe you get some letters after your name, just D-U-N-C or something.
Or dunce.
Yeah.
Okay, Will, so do you want to hear my misconception corner?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, so before we begin, I've got a theme that runs through all of my facts today, which is unusual, because usually they're very arbitrary and very random, which is what arbitrary means. Didn't you say it twice? But I've got a question for you, and it is, which animal do you think is greatest at risk from poaching?
Ooh, poaching. For some reason, it's probably because I'm posh and from the West Country. Whenever you say poaching, I think of pheasants. Poaching pheasants seems like a big thing.
Okay.
But I'm going to guess elephants for their tusks.
Oh, he's gone right into it. I think that is the first time you've driven straight into the wall of misconception corner.
Welcome.
So let's clean up the bloody mess and let's go through this. So So the reason you might have thought that is in 2012, the National Geographic sort of released their magazine, which raised awareness about the plight of elephants in Africa. Because the animals have become, I'm going to use a phrase I've never used before, the animals have become a cause célèbre. Is that right?
No. It's close enough. You know what? It's close enough.
Fair enough. Yeah. Yeah. But people like Hillary Clinton, Prince of Wales, and the basketball star Yao Ming was working to try and save the elephants from being poached across Africa. But according to the Wildlife Fund, there are fewer than 725,000 elephants left in the world, which is quite a low number. And even there are some figures that are below 500,000 because people want to get their tusks for ivory. However, actually, when we talk about the animals at greatest risk, actually, what we're really talking about here is what animals are more at risk from becoming extinct. There are quite a lot of elephants still remaining compared to other animals which are being poached and are less of them. So for example, there are many other iconic creatures such as tigers, which are targeted by poachers and sold for the use of traditional Chinese medicines. And they are down to some numbers, they've guessed at 3,200 in the wild, when a century ago there was 100,000 tigers. Another example would be rhinos, for example. There are 25,000 rhinos left, and they are obviously pursued for their horns, which some people falsely believe, I think this is really interesting, falsely believe they hold healing value against such ailments as rheumatism, something to do with the immune system, I think, and joints. It was quite badly researched. I researched how to say it and I still botched it. But on the black market, for example, a pound of rhino horn, despite being made of the same material as human fingernails and hair, fetches a price greater than that of gold and cocaine.
Wow.
Which, you know, use your nails.
Exactly. I bite my nails off all the time, much to the sorrow and chagrin of my wife. They can have them if they want.
Well, exactly. Just post them somewhere.
Yeah.
Oh, God, a room full of nails. It's just an awful sight.
That's a serial killer's dungeon is what that is. That's not
awful. There is one more animal, two more I want to talk about, actually. Giraffes as well are undergoing what experts call a silent extinction. So the number of giraffes in Africa has decreased by 40% in the last 50 years to fewer than 80,000 giraffes.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Well, that's why it's silent, I suppose.
They're falling. And you see these kind of, I don't know if you've seen these before online, but you see these people, usually rich Americans that want to go hunting in the savannah of Botswana. And then they kill anything they can. And the bigger the animal, the bigger the prize, the better the photo, I suppose. But these images are absolutely heinous to look at, because you just think, oh, it's just a wild animal living its life. And suddenly it's been absolutely, you know, side wiped by this gun. And I just feel that's just such a very wealthy way to destroy the wildlife that isn't even in your own country.
It's something I just will never understand. Obviously I have an affinity with the giraffe, being a human giraffe hybrid myself. But you can just see them from one of the roads in Duisburg in the zoo, and they're so awkward and ungainly. They're like horses in a fairground mirror. They're fantastic creatures.
Yeah.
So I don't know why you'd want to kill them.
I don't know why you want to kill them. I always wonder with a giraffe though, do you think when it drinks coffee, it gets cold at the bottom of its neck? Do you have that problem when you drink tea or coffee?
Yeah, I always thought that tea was like iced tea. What's the big deal? It's all iced tea. It's always freezing by the time it gets to me. Yeah.
We'll break it there.
No, keep it in.
No, okay, I'll keep it in. This is my lag of suffering from corona. Oh my God. Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah. You had corona. The bloody cough you get afterwards is just so persistently horrible, and it just hangs around.
Yeah, it's miserable. I remember when I first realized I had it, when we were coming back from Iceland, and I was lugging my luggage. Funnily enough, that's why it's called luggage. I never realized that. I was lugging my luggage across the road, and all of a sudden I felt my lungs kind of go, and I went, and I looked up at Veronica and she looked at me and we went, okay, it's Corona.
There it is. It's come here. It's hit you. Yep. Do you want to hear about sharks to finish this?
Of course I do.
Okay. Well, maybe not in this context, but one of the other underwater species that are suffering is sharks. So despite the increase in numbers of nations that have banned shark finning, have you heard of that before, shark finning?
Mm-hmm, yeah, cutting off the fins. And do you release the shark?
Yeah, you release the shark after because you're a really nice person. Like,
mm-hmm, of course.
Because that's the thing that allows them to like steer, essentially. And it's quite painful probably to have your fin just cut off. And
yeah, so it's, what would the human equivalent be? Like,
you know,
chopping off your feet or something?
Yeah, taking a sickle to your Achilles or something like that. I don't know. Something disgusting is like that. But approximately 100 million sharks are killed annually. 100 million. 100 million.
Wow.
That's insane.
That's absurd.
But it's obviously put in soups in Asia, and it's like a delicacy. But it doesn't add any flavour from what I've heard previously. It adds nothing to the dish. It's just the just to make it fancier. That's what I've understood from this. Look, there's a shark fin in my soup.
like parsley.
Yeah.
Except a living creature.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And I just don't see the point apart from flaunting people's wealth and going, look what I can afford because I can. It's just, I think it's absolutely obscene and people should be spending their money in different ways. Like saving the creatures, for example, or not killing them. But so with all of that considered, the elephants are obviously poached and we don't like that. But there are other creatures that are obviously more at risk of extinction, and they're the ones that are which the elephants are going to survive a lot longer if we keep going at this rate, but there are many others who are going to be tumbling to their species grave at some point soon, which is a sad story, actually.
It is, yeah. And it's the particularly unpleasant thing about this for me is that we are living through a mass extinction event, the sixth mass extinction caused by human beings. But a lot of it is secondary. So the destruction of the rainforest causes the extinction of the animals that lived in the rainforest. So how do you stop destroying the rainforest? We've spoken about this before. This is one of your previous points, is eating less beef and making sure you get sustainable wood. But those are secondary things. This is a primary thing. This is just don't buy shark fin soup. Don't buy pulverized rhino horns.
Don't buy shoot ivory. Them. Yeah, don't shoot them. Because
don't shoot them. Exactly. It's,
I think that's a good rule of thumb to end with. Don't shoot animals.
Yeah.
Unless there's a big grizzly bear coming at you and the only way of survival is to shoot it right in the face.
Oh, yes, but even then, couldn't the bullet like ricochet off its massive grizzly bear skull? And now you've just got an angry, hurt grizzly bear.
Oh, God, that sounds even more terrifying.
So it's between grizzly bears and I think brown bears. With one of them, you have to play dead. And with the other one, you have to run away. And I can never remember which one's which.
I feel like that's really important to know.
Very important to know if you're going to be in the vicinity of them. So you've got a 50-50 chance there, ladies and gentlemen. Play dead or run away, your choice.
Hi everyone, it's Reese here, editing the podcast about 4 a.m. because I'm a mentalist. But I have to stop the podcast right there because what's coming up now is the interlude between our last fact and our new fact. But there's something really important for you to listen to because we had a chat off air, which we then refer to in one of the final facts, and you need to hear it. So that's why there is this break here. Actually, the reason that I'm up so early is because tomorrow I have to get up for an even earlier flight and I'm trying to get my body clock in shape for that. But here's the actual little bit that you need to listen to.
Good. I had a very depressing statistic that I was thinking of dropping.
What was
which it? Which was, I read in the newspaper yesterday that in the UK, they kill 1 million chickens a week.
Whoa.
Not for their food, but because just as a byproduct, they're chickens who aren't fit for human consumption. And so they're just not useful. So they kill 1 million unfit chickens every week.
I'll take one as a pet.
Do you want to take 52 million a year?
Oh, that might be a little, I don't get enough room in the flat.
A bit crowded. where should we have dinner this Friday evening? Round Reese's? Absolutely not.
Absolutely fucking not. No, it's full of chicken shit, and that aren't fit for humans. Actually,
yeah,
that's the equivalent of buying those really like farmers' weird tomatoes that they sometimes sell in the shops.
Yeah, but I can't quite imagine what that would look like with a chicken. Like, are they cross-eyed or something? Yeah,
three legs. But surely that's more plentiful. You get an extra drumstick out of it. Oh,
yeah, three legs. No, that would be excellent. Yeah. So one and a half legs. You got a wooden leg.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Okay. So let's get into the main event for the week, which you'll be very glad to hear is a quiz time again. Oh. This time it's a historical quiz for you. And the quiz is called What Killed the King?
Oh, do I need pen and paper for this?
So you don't need pen and paper. I don't. You may want to. I don't know. How's your brain fog after coronavirus?
The brain fog is still ascending at the moment. So
right. I can maybe have a pen and paper handy.
I'll go and get some. I'll get some pen and paper. I have a pen.
Excellent.
But not paper yet. Oh, there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, I have pen and paper wielding ready.
Okay, and hopefully, if you're going to play along at home, ladies and gentlemen, then you're sufficiently supplied as well. So the idea here is I've got the first three kings of England after the Norman Conquest. So William I, William II, and Henry I all died in stupid ways. Very weird, odd, stupid ways.
Okay.
And your job is to figure out which one is the real way and which two are the false ways of the kings dying. So we'll go king by king, and okay. I give you three options for each king, and I want you to try and figure out which one you think was the real and which two you think I've made up. And if you get all three of those right, then I've got a bonus round at the end.
Oh, really? If I don't get all three right, do I never get the bonus round at all?
Then we do it again until you get them right.
Okay, so I eventually do get into the boss bonus round.
Yeah, so this may well be the longest episode ever. See how we go. So we start, of course, with William I, William the Conqueror. Mm-hmm. And the three options I have for you are, number one, did he break his neck having fallen from the top of a tower in Normandy whilst leaning out to look at a passing line of geese?
Okay.
Option one. Option two, was he impaled by his saddle having grown enormously obese?
Okay.
And option three, did he drown in the River Severn whilst showing his brother Odo how easy it was to swim across? There's your three options.
Right, I just want to say one thing. Like, you've obviously made two of these up, and at least two of them are really funny. So at least one of these, you have very good, a very good sort of mind and a good funny mind to make these up.
I'm sick and twisted. Yes, that is correct.
Fair enough. I'm also thinking maybe you've got some of these ideas from other people that have died this way as well. So we've got he's breaking his neck, looking at a line of geese from a high mm-hmm. place. Is that right?
Yep.
Impaled by his saddle because he's too corpulent. Mm-hmm. And the other one is drowning, trying to tell someone that I can swim across the River Severn.
Exactly.
Okay, so they all... the breaking neck and the drowning one for me sound more plausible as a way to die than being impaled by your saddle because you're too fat. You have to be going at some pace to be able to... The only way I can imagine it is something... He's galloping along and something sharp just goes through his arteries in his legs and then just causes him to die that way.
Well, I can give you a bit more specific information about all three options if you want. So I'll give you a bit more info about the saddle one.
Yeah, go on.
So specifically the pommel of the saddle, which if you've ridden a horse before, you'll know that at the front of the saddle, there's a little kind of raised, like how would you describe it? A nubbin, I guess, something you can hold on to with your hands. And that, as the horse ran across and didn't quite jump into a ditch, the horse landed in such a way that his body slammed forward onto the pommel and that ripped apart his guts.
Oh, God, wow.
Or did I just make that up?
Or you just made that up. That's quite incredible if you have. I tell you what, because it seemed to be the most unlikely, and I know how these kind of games work, I'm going to go with Impaled by Saddle as my guess.
And that would be absolutely correct. I did not make any of that up. That was 100% true. It's exactly what happened.
Oh my God. What a horrible way to go. Yeah, so the horse just
failed to clear a ditch. And because he was so enormously fat in his old age, the pommel ripped straight into his gut. Oh. At least that's one version of the story. The other version of the story is he just fell ill. But
that's boring. Come on.
That's boring. We're not believing that. So yeah, he died on, this happened around about the 1st of September, 1087, and he died on the 9th of September, 1087, and was buried in Normandy as well. And the interesting thing about him having died is that he left the state of the kingdom in a complete mess. And this will become important for the rest of the quiz. He had three sons. Mm-hmm. The oldest was called Robert, and Robert had the nickname Short Ass. Robert Shortass.
Was he a little lad?
He wasn't particularly small, is the thing. It's actually Kurt Hose is actually his proper nickname. That's kind right. of what he's actually known as. But it basically means Robert Shortass. And he was given Normandy, but the second son, called William, was given England. And then the youngest son, Henry, got nothing.
Oh.
So William, when he died, gave the crown on to William II.
I see. Okay. And that's who we're going to talk about next, isn't it?
And that's who we're going to talk about next. Yes.
Okay.
So your three options for William II are, was he number one, stabbed by a commoner whilst touring the taverns of London? Was he two, murdered by his closest advisors for being gay? Or three, was he hit by an arrow whilst out hunting in the New Forest?
Aha. Do you know when that we did the quiz last time and you said, I'm going to bank one because I think I know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Brasilia shaped like an aeroplane. Mm-hmm. I've got that hunch now, but for this, fact,
what are you thinking?
So I'm thinking with hit by an arrow in the New Forest is my idea here. As good as the other two are, a murder for being gay, I can understand that. And the other one, which was stabbed by a commoner. Why was he stabbed by a commoner?
Because he was touring the taverns of London. The Palace of Westminster was separated from the village of London in the medieval period. And he wanted to get to know his subjects a little bit better. So he went touring the taverns of London and the dice fight broke out in one of the taverns and the knife was plunged willy-nilly and ended up snicking his neck. Ooh. And he bled out.
See. Well, I think that's all poppycock from you, and I'm going to go with
poppycock, sir. How dare you?
And I'm going to go with hit by an arrow in the New Forest.
You're correct. Yes. That was in your very polite way of saying it, poppycock. He was out hunting in Hampshire, somewhere near Bewley Abbey, and an arrow whizzed through the trees out of nowhere and went straight through his lung, and he died on the spot. And the weird thing, there's two weird things about this. One is that no one knows who fired the arrow at all.
Oh, wow.
But the second weird thing is that the nobles who were with him just left his body. They didn't go near him. They didn't try and save him. And that's fed rumors, which are probably true, that he was murdered by his nobles.
Ah.
And this is where the second answer comes from. I didn't just pull that out of my proverbial. He never married. He never had children. And for a king to do that, as we spoke about in our first episode,
that's bad news.
Really bad news. And so people have questioned his sexuality ever since he was killed. Was he murdered because he was damaging the dynasty in some way?
Oh, so maybe
we'll never know.
So maybe your middle answer, murder because he was gay, has potential weighting to a certain extent.
Could be true. Yeah. Ah. My personal favorite theory about the murder of William II, William Rufus, he was also called because he had red hair. Rufus means red or redhead. Is that he was murdered in a ceremony, a ceremonial sacrifice for the old gods of Anglo-Saxon England.
Right.
So in order to appease basically Odin and Thor, he was murdered for them.
Oh, wow.
Which is not true, But okay. It is a cool story.
It is a good story. It got me wrapped on that one. It's quite. But yeah, I also have to commend you for your ability to tell a good story about being stabbed in, by a commoner while looking around the taverns. It's pretty convincing. So
thank you. Not only am I sick and twisted, but I'm also a very good liar.
Yeah, so absolutely. I've got a lot to worry about.
Going well.
Okay, so, William the Second.
Not William the Third, because William the Third comes a lot later. Okay. William the Second dies, as I mentioned, without any children, and so his younger brother Henry comes to the throne. Henry the First.
Oh, it's Henry the Third.
Yes.
Let me just make a correction for my Tippex.
Henry the First.
So. Got it.
So, the options for Henry the First are, did he eat too many lampreys?
Did he
eat too much pottage? Or did he eat too many kippers?
Okay, so he's options. Eating. He's eating here. So he's eating. What's the first thing he ate?
A lamprey. A lamprey is kind of like an eel, but it's got suckers on its mouth. Okay. So it's got a circular mouth and the teeth all kind of point inwards and it sucks onto things and then bites them.
Okay, lamprey.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Lamprey, pottage, or kippers?
Pottage? Can I have some help with that one?
Pottage is a kind of... pottage was the staple medieval food. It's a... how do you describe it? It's kind of like a lentil curry, but without the spices.
Okay,
it's like a stew made with vegetables and lentils and that kind of thing. Extraordinarily bland, but okay. Very simple to make, very cheap to make.
Okay, and very filling it sounds as well.
And very filling, yeah.
And the third one again was...
Kippers.
I know kippers. That's a fish, isn't it?
That is, yeah, smoked. Was it haddock or herring? You're asking the wrong person.
Yeah, I got a hunch it's herring, but I don't know. Maybe someone can tell us. okay, do you want to hear my thought process here?
Yeah.
Okay, so pottage is an interesting one for me because obviously everyone eats it, as you just told me. So that means in terms of the type of, if everyone's eating it, someone might just die from eating it because everyone's eating it. So that could be likely. Kippers, not quite sure. I imagine you'd probably choke on that or it would, maybe, could they be poisoned in some way? I'm not quite sure, like by accident. I'm thinking of like South Korean fish foods and stuff like that, that sort of line here. But I'm going to go with the lamprey because of the suckers that might cling onto the inside of the throat and cause him to choke. That's going to be my guess.
Interesting logic. And whilst I do have to query your logic, the outcome is 100% correct.
Okay,
he did indeed
good.
Die from the phrases, a surfeit of lampreys.
A surfeit of lampreys.
Yes, he just ate too many. And the source I read for this said that it was against his doctor's advice as well, which I don't know if he went to the doctor beforehand. I don't know what's funnier, making an appointment with the doctor to say, look, I've got these 15 kilos of lampreys and I really want to eat them. Is that a bad idea? Or if the doctor's standing over him whilst he's eating going, I want to stop there.
I hope it's both. I hope it's both. I hope he went to the doctors beforehand and said, I've got these lambreys, loads of them. I want to eat all of them. And he's like, no, it's a bad idea. Don't do it. And he's like, no, I'm going to do it. And he's like, okay, like, I have to watch you just in case.
Right, I'll be there. I'll have my medical kit and I'll watch you eat them. And when I say stop, you've got to stop, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, all right. I'll stop if you say stop.
Well, that didn't work then, obviously.
Obviously not. No. No, just no. The man ate too many lampreys and he was sick for about a week and then died on the 1st of December, 1135. So to finish off with Henry I, the weird thing that I found out about how they dealt with him after he died, William II, of course, was just abandoned. Henry I, they buried most of his body in Reading, in the Abbey in Reading.
Right.
But they took out specifically his intestines and buried them in France. And I cannot for the life of me understand why.
Is that where the lamprey were?
That's where the lamprey were, exactly. Was it a punishment for them?
Yeah.
It's insane thing to do.
Were the lamprey from France and they had to be, they had to honour where they were born and they had to go back.
Maybe they were agents of the French king sent in to go and take out the English from the inside.
Oh, they were like kamikazes. They just went in for this lamprey to kill the king.
And they so were here's buried. What you got to do. You got to be chopped up. You got to be lightly boiled and then you got to go and kill the king from inside.
It's a hell of a journey.
It is. Okay, well, congratulations to Reese. You have got 100% so far. So
I get bonus rounds.
You do. That popping sound is us bursting through into the bonus round.
Oh, really? Excellent.
And bonus round is not a king. Bonus round is a brother of a king of England.
Okay.
He's called George Plantagenet, the Duke of Clarence. So we'll call him Clarence. And he was a member of the House of York during the War of the Roses. And he died in 1478 at the age of 28 by, number one, being launched in a catapult at his own troops before a battle.
Okay.
Number two, being thrown in an oubliette in Leicester, where his remains were found under a car park in 2012.
Okay.
Or number three, being drowned in a barrel of wine.
Okay.
Those are your three options.
Can I ask what the second one is? I don't know what an oubliette is.
Yeah. So in French, to forget something means oublier, is oublier. And so an oubliette is a little hole in the floor of a dungeon where you forget about the person. You chuck them in there and they are there forever. And you will occasionally throw down water and occasionally throw down a bit of food, like the rusk of a piece of bread or something like that. And they will just stay there forever.
That sounds terrifying.
So he was forgotten about in a dungeon. Oh, yeah, it's a horrific way to die.
That's awful.
Because you will be there for the rest of your life, which could be decades.
Okay. Now, so that obviously sounds relatively plausible. The oubliette, I quite like that as well, actually. I've also learned some French. My goodness me. The catapult sounds ridiculous, but is possible. I think that would be very funny to have witnessed, to be catapulted into your troops. But for some reason, and I can't for the life of me think of why, but I think being drowned in a bottle, in a barrel of wine, sounds the most incredible way to die based on the fact that you were probably wanting to drink the wine and then you just get a little bit, you go in a little bit too deep and then that's it. So I'm going to go with the barrel of wine as my guess, and I'm worried now.
Your thinking is exactly the same as the thinking of one George Plantagenet, Duke of Clarence, because he was given the choice of how do you want to be executed? And he said, if I'm going to go, I may as well go pissed. Drown me in a barrel of my favorite wine. Oh. And that's what they did.
Oh, excellent.
So you're exactly right.
Oh, that's fantastic. Do you know what, right? He's not wrong. He's not wrong. That's a good way to go. I hope he had some lamprey beforehand.
Against doctor's orders again.
Yes. But drowned in a barrel of wine. Like, so I can only imagine he was put in and then the lid was put on.
That's what I'm thinking. That's how I'm picturing it. Yeah. The problem is with this story is there isn't much evidence for it.
Oh,
there's
no.
The story itself. And there's the fact that his daughter, after Clarence's death, wore around her neck a necklace with a little golden barrel on it, which is quite a good way of kind of showing to the king who had Clarence executed that it's a good way of sticking two fingers up, essentially. But the background to it is Clarence went mental, essentially. His wife died and he started blaming everybody, blamed somebody who the king quite liked of performing witchcraft. And then he started rebelling against the king. And so he was just executed for being a traitor, more or less. And because he was the king's brother, he got given the choice of how he wants to go. And it was done in private. And so nobody really knows. But the legend is he decided, I want to be drowned in a barrel of Malmsey wine, which is sweet white wine. So a very sticky, but a very delicious way to go.
I bet he tried to drink his way out of it at the start.
Almost certainly. But they would have had a backup barrel just in case.
Oh, yeah.
And if you can drink through that, then you've got other problems.
Absolutely. I think that would kill you, actually.
Yeah. So congratulations to Reese. 100% correct.
100%. So I just want to say now, so I did a quiz last time. You got 100%. I've done a quiz this time. I got 100%. I think that there are gaps being filled here.
There are, yeah. Or the inverse is true, and actually we already know this stuff anyway.
Oh, maybe. Or there's a third option here, game theory time. Or there's a third option here where we're just 100% fluky.
Uh-huh. Do we now have to choose which one of those three options we think is correct?
I think we do. I'm going to go on a limb and say a combination of all three.
Oh, you... Coward.
So, well, are you ready for my gap-filling adventure?
I am, yeah. Lead me down gap-filling... Let's try that one again, shall we?
Yeah, okay.
That's COVID is what that is.
That is, oh my God.
About three quarters of a sentence.
I think that's pretty much what it's been like the whole time.
Do you know what? Let's not try again. Leave it in. Let's go.
Let's leave that one in. Okay, let's go. Okay, so I've called this one Guam's, and I love this word, Guam's Arachnopocalypse.
Guam's Arachnopocalypse.
Yes. So, okay. So keeping with the theme of animal is what I'm doing here. You might have worked that out as my theme. So on a walk through the lush Guam jungle, which is a US Pacific Island territory, you'd expect to hear things like swaying of trees, crashing of waves along the shores, and the chirping of native birds throughout the air. However, the latter has been replaced. And there's someone I'm going to introduce you now who's done a bit of research into Guam. And it's Haldor Rogers, who is a Huxley Fellow of Ecology and Evolutionary at the Rice University. And she describes, you can't walk through the jungles of Guam without a stick in your hand to knock down the spider webs, because Guam is drowning in spiders.
Drowning in spiders.
Yeah.
Just pause on that word choice. Drowning.
Drowning in spiders, yes.
Wow. That's not a fate that you want to befall yourself. That's terrible.
No, it's awful. Do you know anything about Guam?
I knew it was part of the US, but I only remembered that having mentioned it. Not a lot. Small population in the tens of thousands. I think there's a military base there because it's on the way towards the Pacific Rim, towards Japan.
You're pretty much there.
That's about it.
Yeah, so the military has a little link to this, actually, as I'm about to describe. So just to give a bit of context of where Guam is located, it's in the Australia and Oceania continent in the Western Pacific Ocean, and it's nearly about 3,000 or so miles west of Hawaii, and it is the most popular southernmost island of the Marina Islands. So it's, you know, there's a lot of people there. It's quite a popular holiday destination for US tourists as well. And there's a military base there as well. So that's a bit of information about Guam. Now, what I'm going to do now is give you three species of animals, because they're quite important when they go through this, what's happening in Guam. So, we have firstly an invasive species. You probably know what an invasive species is. Do you want to try and explain that one?
It seems quite self-explanatory. A species has come from somewhere else and is now taking over.
Pretty much. So the one that is the culprit here of the invasive species is the brown tree snake. I'm now going to attempt to say its Latin name, which is the Boiga irregularis.
Which, not bad.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, we'll take that.
Yeah. Then now we've got the native Guam bird or Guam birds. We have the Guam rail, which I think is just a rail network that runs through Guam, it sounds like, but it's the Guam rail, the Marana swiftlet, and the Micronesian kingfisher. So they are really important. There are other native birds, but they're like the most populous ones. And this, the spider is called the banana spider.
Okay, right.
So they are the three species that we're going to be discussing here. So sometime in the mid-1900s, the brown tree snake made their way onto the island. So they appeared roughly about the time of the island's liberation, so most likely after hitching a ride with the US military equipment from Papua New Guinea is what they predict. So the military, US military, went up from Papua New Guinea to Guam, and there were a couple of brown tree snakes on there, sort of hitching a ride all the way to Guam, you know, stowaways or whatever it is, trying to get up there. Now the problem is they outnumber the Guam population by 10 to 1. So that's 1 to 2 million snakes on the island of Guam.
That's a lot of snakes.
That's a lot of snakes.
Not a few snakes.
No, that's more than a lot of snakes. However, the species isn't particularly dangerous to humans, though it is venomous and its bite can pack a punch. Like if you're a grown human man, and if one of these snakes was to bite you, it wouldn't cause any sort of problems. You wouldn't any risk to life or anything like that. However, they are dangerous to things like chickens or small cats and things like that. So that's where they're dangerous. So they've also been known, there's so many of them, they've been known to come out of toilets as well, which is not so good.
That's a really, like, that's such a primal fear, isn't it? Things aren't supposed to come out of toilets, they go into toilets and then they disappear from your mind forever.
Yeah, that's it, as far away from where as possible. Since the wildlife on Guam evolved without these kinds of snakes snacking on their eggs and young, the forest provided a veritable smorgasbord for the invaders, causing the population to expand to a whopping 2 million snakes, with densities of up to 5,000 individuals per square kilometer.
That's too many snakes.
It's a lot of snakes. So there's a lot of it's a lot of snakes. They have a lot of eggs they could feed on. They just blew up. But they also do things like they've caused shortages of electric systems. They've gone through them, and over the course of about 7 years, that's cost Guam $4.5 million. Like,
wow,
just because they kept,
that's $2 per snake.
Yeah, about that. Yeah, that's a lot.
It's not a bad return on investment though, $2 per snake.
That's not too bad. That's pretty cheap. But I'm sure the people of Guam want their electricity to run all of the time.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
Yeah. but actually that's not the main problem with these snakes. Actually, it's the ecosystem that suffered the most. And by the mid 80s, 10 of the 12 native bird species of Guam had vanished entirely, including the kingfisher, which can't be found anywhere else on Earth. So it's endemic to Guam. The only place you can now find these kingfishers are being bred in zoos in some places around the world. They're the only places that you could. So they're not extinct, but they're pretty close. Now, the problem is that obviously you have no birds there. Firstly, it's really eerie. There's no bird song at all whatsoever. And Halja Rogers says, like, yeah, it's really weird because you expect an island like Guam to have lots of birds, lots of chirping, but there's none of that whatsoever. It's really silent. However, the problem is that when you've got no birds on the island, the birds are eating all of the spiders that are on the island. So we've got a big ecological imbalance here that's about to explode on Guam. So there was a massive growth of spiders because no one was eating them whatsoever. They had no predators anymore. So the banana spider population just exploded out of control. So just to give you a bit of an idea, Rogers, who was doing the investigation in Guam, said that There's such an abundance in the wet season, for example, where they have on average 18 spider webs every 10 meters. And in the dry season, it's in the wet season, it was 26 webs per 10 meters. Which is just insane.
So that means if I were to walk from where I'm sat now down to my bathroom, which is the other end of the flat, then I would have to dodge about 30 spider webs.
Yeah, that sounds about right. It would be like,
Jesus.
It would be like you've decorated your apartment for Halloween.
Whilst being watched by loads of snakes just slithering about the place.
Yeah, and notably no bird song whatsoever.
So this sounds like a nightmare, this island.
It is a nightmare, but it's not a nightmare for the reason that that you might think. Having lots of spiders on an island isn't actually a problem. It's just like, if you're an arachnophobe, for example, that's a problem. If you're scared of snakes, that's a problem. Don't go in the fucking jungle if you have those two fears. Just don't do it. But the problem actually lies of there being no birds on the island whatsoever. So because birds pollinate the crops and control the pests of the island, and by them not being there, it means that so food security in Guam has started to decline, which means their food prices have gone up as a result. So the more spiders there are, the higher their food costs will be, in a weird way. It's kind of a bit like that. But yeah, so that's actually the biggest problem is, like, yeah, you can see it and go, holy shit, there's a lot of spiders. Like, there's loads. And this is not like, because there are other islands around Guam as well, and that's how they've measured the impact of an invasive species on an island, because they're only on Guam, these brown tree snakes. And they've compared it to other islands around around Guam, and they've noticed that the increase of spiders is completely unique to Guam, and it is directly caused by the invasion of these brown snakes scaring off or killing these native birds of Guam. So it's quite handy they have other islands they can compare data with as a result. So it's the birds that not pollinating crops that is causing a big problem. And as a result, they're having to import a lot more food because they can't grow a lot of their own food on the island itself. And that's making it more expensive. But there is a potential solution. And this solution is quite cool. And weirdly, the solution comes from the USGS, which is the United States Geological Survey.
Okay, throw stones at the spiders?
Which is what I would... that might work. Maybe not the spiders. They're trying to eradicate the snakes. So maybe they're trying to throw stones at the snakes.
Well, that's why I don't work for the US Geographical Society.
Exactly.
I don't have the answers.
Who's employed this idiot?
I'll be laughed out of their day one. Spider boy, get out of here. You're throwing stones at the wrong creature, you idiot.
But if you were employed by the USGS to try and eradicate the brown snakes, this is what you'd have to do, okay? So what they do is they need to learn how the snakes behave. So what they do, they go out at night to try and hunt them, and they don't not hunting to kill them initially. What they're doing, they go out and they try and catch one. And when they catch one, they put it in a bag and they bring it back to the laboratory on Guam where they're based. And then they put it under anesthetic using isoflurane. So the snake is asleep for 15 minutes. When the snake is asleep for 15 minutes, they then put a tracking device inside the snake, which is only 5% of its body weight. So it can still crawl around really easily. And the idea is that they're trying to build spatial data knowledge to be able to track their movements, to find the optimum locations to place traps and poison.
I see, right. Because when you said they're trying to figure out how snakes behave, I thought, surely, of all the animals, that's the easiest one to answer. They slither. Everyone knows that snakes slither.
They do
so
slither.
So why do you need to go through all this palaver? But if they're trying to figure out where they slither, again, this is another reason why I don't work for the USGS.
Exactly. Because if they asked that on your interview, I don't think that you would still be throwing rocks at spiders, right?
Exactly. How do snakes behave? Well, hang on a minute, because I've just seen a black widow over there and I've got a beautiful pebble that I'm going to bounce off its bonk. Be laughed out the door.
What they need is for you to head to Guam and just think you're going to be the stone thrower. You're going to be the savior. that's the general plan, is that they're going to try and look at the spatial pattern of these snakes and try and find the best way to kill them and to get them off the island. Because they say once the snakes have been removed, it's likely that some of the birds will come back. They will try and reintroduce some of the birds that are now in situ care, so in zoos. That's the long game here. But that's the invasive species of Guam. And just to remind you of the title of the game, which I do love, it's the Arachnopocalypse of Guam.
Drowning in spiders. Wow. So this one, human beings, so this is kind of the secondary order of extinction that human beings have done, because it's not intentional, it's unintentional, but it's a byproduct of what human beings have done.
Yeah, because if humans weren't shipping things around the world, then the snakes would have, there has been stories of rats and snakes going across on bits of wood and driftwood floating around. I think that's one of the Galapagos' fears. I think they have an invasive species where that's happened. I think obviously it's secondary and unintentional that these snakes ended up on Guam and literally just overrun the whole of the jungle within it.
And the banana spider, does it actually eat bananas?
I hope it does.
Because I remember reading an edition of The Beano where Nasha gets in trouble because she's mistaken for being a banana spider that came out of a box of bananas. And ever since then, every time I've looked at bananas in the supermarket, I've always thought, oh, is that a banana spider?
Is that how they got their name? Just first person that saw this piece of bonnet came out of a banana box.
Yeah, it makes sense.
That would make sense. Yeah.
I've done something slightly different from time to time this week, which is I'm going to start telling you a bit of the story, and then the clue will evolve from the story to try and give you a bit of context.
Okay, right.
So, we're in the year 1806.
1806.
And we're in England, and a member of parliament called Humphrey Howarth, who's a member of parliament for Evesham, has agreed to a duel with another man called Henry Barry, who is the 8th Earl of Barrymore. So we have Howarth against Barry, or, well, we'll call him Barrymore because he's a noble. And Howarth prepared for the duel in a notable way. And that notable way of preparing for the duel involved the number one. Oh. I want you to try and guess what he did that was so notable.
The duel. So can I just, a duel, is this what, an actual fight?
Yeah, this is pistols at dawn type duel.
Oh, and the number, pistols at dawn, 10 paces back, turn, bang, like the Wild West.
That's the one, yeah.
Okay, so number one, I am going to guess that if it's something like duel where you're using a pistol or some sort of firearm, I'm going to guess that he put a rule on where you were only allowed to have one bullet or one piece of ammo in your weaponry.
Mm-hmm. Very creative. Yeah, it's not true. And the way that these pistols would work is they take about a minute to load, so it would only be one bullet in the first place. But creative answer nonetheless.
Thank you very much. I get skill point.
I'll give you a clue.
Go on.
It involves clothing.
Right. Clothing. Mm-hmm. And the number one, did he insist that he had to wear a onesie? Was he dressed as a tiger onesie or a banana onesie?
He did. People 200 years ago had slightly more dignity and decorum than to turn up in public wearing a banana onesie. So no, it's not true.
That's not true. Okay.
Do you want to have another guess?
I'm going to try maybe and think of one more thing. Number one, it's something to do with clothing. Did he insist that they only have to wear one shoe?
You're kind of skirting around the correct answer, but you're not quite. No, the answer is Howarth turned up wearing one single piece of clothing, which was his underpants.
Cool.
So the story is, it's at the races in Brighton in 1806, and Barrymore punches Howarth in the face. So an earl punching an MP in the face and gives him a black eye, which is quite rude. And so Howarth says, fine, let's settle this in a manly way. Pistols at dawn. I'll see you out here on the racetrack come first light. And so Barrymore turns up, and whilst he's waiting, he sees Howarth turn up wearing literally just his pants. And the reason why wasn't that Howarth was completely mentally ill. It's because he used to be a surgeon. And when he was a surgeon, he saw that people, when they got shot, didn't die from the bullet. They died from the infected wound.
Ah.
And so this being about 50 years before Ignaz Semmelweis figures out what bacteria are and how infection works. All Howarth knows is if you wear dirty clothing, in fact, if you wear any clothing at all, then as the bullet goes into your body, it will carry a piece of that clothing with you, and that will start to get infected, and that's what will kill you.
Oh.
So in order to stop the clothing from going into his body and infecting him, he thought, I'll just wear nothing at all.
So what he's doing, he's going with the intelligence play here, isn't he? That's what he's going with. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Mm-hmm. And just to be clear, it will hurt though, being shot, I'm sure.
Being shot hurts. Yes. I think we can confirm that. That's fairly easy to confirm. Yes.
Yeah.
But the thing is with the guns at this point in time, they're so weak that a bullet may, especially from a handgun, it'll go in maybe a centimeter or two, but the chance of it penetrating muscle, very, very slim. The chance of it penetrating bone, next to impossible.
Wow. So there's no Desert Eagles then? Nothing like just racing
exactly.
through?
You're not going to get blasted off your feet like in a Quentin Tarantino film. No.
Jesus Christ.
So, and the outcome of it is, as Barrymore watches Howarth come up, wearing nothing except his underpants, he kind of realizes, if I kill this man, I will go down in history as the man who've killed a naked dueler. That cannot happen. So he just walked away and let the insult go. And Howarth won, and he comes away with victory. but not so much dignity.
No.
Because he is stark naked, except for his pants, in front of everyone at the races.
Did he win an Honor Darwinian Award for that? Because I think
he would definitely have D-U-N-C after his name, for sure. For sure.
So, Will, it's my number time now. But I'm also going to start, you start with a story for your one. Actually, I'm going to start with some correspondence that we had recently about for our show. I know, it's our first one. I'm quite excited. So we had an email from Jamie, who's a keen listener, and he emailed us to say, love the show and happy to have found a podcast that talks about my two favorite subjects. I wanted to know if you could do a section on dogs invading football matches or animals involved in sports matches. I was watching some old matches in the UK and dogs sometimes would invade the pitch, but that doesn't seem to happen anymore. But they seem to always come up on the pitch in other games around the world, and he wondered why. And he says, keep up the good work, guys. So that was nice correspondence from Jamie.
Yeah, thank you, Jamie. And I'm glad you picked out this email, because I love dogs on pitches too. So what have you got?
So, okay. So my number time is 75%. And it's going to, I've put dogs, like there is an extra bit, but do you want us to make a stab in the dark with 75% of dogs?
Okay. Because I can tell you what I want to be true.
Okay.
Which is, say, up until the advent of the Premier League, 75% of matches had a dog invasion, which I would just love to be true.
Look, you do. It's just a whole new sport at that point, isn't it?
It is.
It's not that, but I can give you an extra clue. Mm-hmm. And the extra clue is junkyard dogs.
Junkyard dogs. So a dog from a scrapyard.
Kind of, yeah. So junk is a play. It's a junkyard that is like a slang word for this type of dog.
Oh, okay. I see. Wow. Right. Okay. So is it that 75% of pitch invasions were carried out by junkyard dogs?
it's a really good guess. So it's you're almost there. So I've kind of, it's led astray a little bit with the idea of being dog and football invasions, and it will come to, clear why I've had to steer away from that slightly. But 75% of all dogs around the world are feral or stray.
Oh, wow.
Which is absolutely nuts, right?
That is nuts. That's incredible. I had no idea.
Do you roughly know how many dogs there are in the world?
I have no idea. I can tell you how many I hope there are, which is like the population of China. If we're talking over 1 billion dogs, that would make me happy.
It's half of that.
Okay.
So we have
so we're talking about 300 million feral dogs.
500 million. Roughly. Yeah.
500 million dogs in total.
Sorry, yeah. 300 million dogs are feral. Yeah, sorry, of course. Yes. Yeah. Which is insane amount, insane number. Like, I couldn't believe when I read this. So do you want me to sort of tell you the story of how I got to this point?
Yeah, absolutely.
So dogs invading football pitches are like, the stats for that are really hard to find. So the only way I could really look at it, like I did look on Google for information for this. I just couldn't find anything really that was anything. It was nothing really existed. However, I'd looked through a lot of YouTube videos about dogs invading pitches and other animals doing that. And it seemed to be really common in Latin America. That's where it was really popular. Like it happened quite regularly. So I led to then doing a little bit of research on stray dog issues in Latin America. And then I came across a research article from the Veterinary World called, and it's Abandonment of Dogs in Latin America, Strategies and Ideas. And I thought that was quite a good lead into talking about stray dogs, because I think a lot of the dogs that invade a lot of pitches in Latin America are stray dogs. They have no owner. Which would make sense. And when you hear some of the numbers that come through, it'd make even more sense. But some of the facts I got from this are incredible. And I think you're going to like them. So firstly, stray dogs are put into three categories. So the first category is those that do not have a home, but live on the streets is a stray dog. The second category is free range dogs that have owners, but are let out freely to roam the streets.
And they count as stray.
They count as stray, yeah. Or they, it's like a free range, they kind of call them.
Free range.
Yeah, free range dogs.
Okay, their eggs are slightly more expensive.
Yeah, that, exactly, yes. And the final ones are community dogs, ones that may have a variety of owners and they move freely between them.
Okay, right.
So we've
like a dog for rent.
Kind of, yeah. So yeah, so it's a timeshare dog. So there are categories of stray dogs, what we would classify as stray dogs. So stray dogs cause serious health, political, social, economic, and welfare problems, comprising street roaming. So they cause a lot of car accidents. They bark at night, keeping everyone awake. And they obviously have some aggression and they do bite as well, some of them. So even though like, stray dogs are a big problem in some particular areas around the world. Have you ever experienced kind of a stray dog in any country you visited?
Yeah, when we went to India in 2004, I remember we went to a market and we got some food from the Nepalese stand, some little dumplings called, I think, momos. And we could not keep the stray dogs away from these dumplings. And they kind of looked a bit like Rhodesian Ridgebacks, I seem to remember. So fairly big, with short brown hair, and they just would not keep away from these dumplings. And me being a naive Westerner, thought that they were the most adorable thing ever and was patting them and playing with them. And the locals were like looking at me like I was mental and they were kind of kicking the dog to keep it away because of course, being a stray dog, it was covered in fleas, but I didn't know that at the time. So luckily I did escape with no fleas, but I remember the dogs like forcefully, aggressively trying to get at my delicious dumplings.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So we had a similar experience in Sao Tome where there were stray dogs everywhere as well, and the locals again were confused why we were interacting with them, and because obviously it's a big problem for them as well. And we were playing with them as well when one was following us for a few hours as well. So it's because we had some food probably, and that's it was. So, but yeah, they cause a lot of problems.
I once got adopted by a stray dog actually. Now that we mention it, we were in Cape Verde, and there were dogs on the beach, and they were just kind of hanging out, having a lovely time on the beach. But we decided to go into town to get some food, and it was I don't know a half hour walk or so. And the dog had clearly never been more than one street in from the beach. So he followed me for a bit, as if to say, like, have you got food? And I clearly didn't have any food, but the dog kept on following me, and it followed me to the extent that it didn't know where it was, and it was completely lost and terrified and looking at me like I was its leader. Like, where are we going, master?
Oh, no.
I'm not your master. Leave me alone.
Wow. So you accidentally adopted a stray dog.
Yeah, and then I felt really guilty when it wandered off and got lost in the city, but then it came back and found me, and then we all headed back to the beach again. So all's well that ends well, but
okay.
Got adopted.
Wow. Well, I think we had that's the same experience in the South Tome. It followed us because I think we took it away from its sort of crib and then ended up getting lost until we went back to the same place. So yeah, they're quite territorial, I think, these animals. Okay, so here's some cool statistics coming your way now. So up to 95% of all animal bites are caused by dogs in urban areas from Brazil and Puerto Rico. So like the absolute majority of all animal bites are caused by dogs in places like in Latin America.
Wow.
They can all be obviously vectors of transmissible diseases due to their close interaction with humans. So for example, rabies is mm-hmm. is the popular one where 55, popular, is that the right word?
Yeah, sure. No, rabies is the number one top of the charts disease to get from dogs this season, I've heard.
I might say most common is rabies. So 55,000 human deaths per year is from rabies. Leptospirosis and hookworm disease are other ones that you can get from dog bites as well. I looked at hookworm disease. It's horrible.
Why would you look at that?
Because I wanted to, because I'm mental.
That's the kind of thing that when you go on Wikipedia, I wish that Wikipedia had an option where you could see it without images for exactly that kind of thing. I don't want to see what a hookworm looks like. And I definitely don't want to see someone with hookworm disease.
Yeah, I saw. Yeah. So basically it's a worm that lives inside your leg and starts eating through all of it, essentially. And it was interesting to look at a little bit, but it was pretty gross as well. I love the internet for that stuff. But they cause a few other environmental problems, stray dogs as well. So they do things like ripping open rubbish bags, defecating and urinating in public is another huge problem for them as well. Would you like some pee and poo facts for stray dogs?
Of course I would. As if you'd have to ask.
I knew you'd be the man to want to hear this. Okay. So in Quito, in Ecuador, the sewage system receives 51 tons of dog poo a day and 720 milliliters of pee each day per dog.
That's quite a lot of pee for a dog.
It is.
Pint and a half.
Pretty much, yeah. Pint and a half. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I like how you went for the pee. 51 tons of dog poo.
Do you know, I've kind of built up a mental barrier from that one because I did start to try and visualize what that would look like. And then I decided I don't want to do that. So I stopped.
Yeah, fair enough. It is a lot of poo.
It's a lot of poo.
So Quito, Ecuador, the home of lots of dog poo and pee in the streets.
Because I was specifically thinking, would that be enough to fill my flat? And then I thought, I don't want to imagine my flat full of 51 tons of Colombo of Ecuadorian stray dog poo.
No, you'd be hard pressed to sell the flat afterwards.
You would. I think that'd be even worse than your chicken problem.
Might well be, actually. Yeah. Would you rather have 51 tons of dog poo in your apartment, or how many chickens was it? A million chickens?
It was a million chickens a week. It's like a subscription service. It's like HelloFresh, but for live chickens that are slightly wonky.
Wonky chickens. Oh, God. I think I'd have the chicken problem.
It's a million chickens, Rich. That's a lot of chickens.
Well, you could have the dog poo then.
But I thought,
that's a conundrum.
That's a lot of dog poo. That is a lot of poo. Because I just don't know the legit. Are we talking like a pipe coming up into my front door? And then I can, because then that would be easy. I could just rig up a pipe, go straight out the window onto my neighbors. Not my problem.
I was hoping more of a delivery service.
So a constant stream of couriers with a little box about the size of a laptop, and you open it. Like my wife used to get some cosmetics on a subscription service, and you open it and, oh, it's nice, it's a little purple lip balm, and oh, that's nice, it's a little mound of Ecuadorian dog shit again. That is the 16th week. I don't know why I'm still subscribed to this, if I'm honest. This feels like a mistake. But I'll stick with it because it could get better next week.
There is one thing you're doing there. You're helping the problem in Quito and Ecuador by removing.
That's true. There's a lot of pollution involved to get it from Quito to here. So I guess the conclusion is, if you're going to subscribe to a weekly or bi-weekly dog poo service, make sure it's local.
Yes, of course.
There we go.
We prefer the local dog poo. That's what we want.
Exactly.
Right. That's probably the biggest tangent we've ever gone off on, I think. Okay. Would you like to know how they're stopping the problem?
Do you know what? This one I'm less interested in for some reason. Sure. How are they stopping it? It's not a subscription service, is it?
It isn't a subscription service. No, it isn't. Although,
they're missing a trick there.
I know they are. But maybe it kind of is, to a weird way. So firstly, in the 70s, they used a brute force approach, which you can kind of imagine what that is.
Forcing it back in? What is the brute force approach?
Well, actually, funny you say that. Before I continue with this, there's one fact I do have here. I want to fact check this by you because I think there's a typo, because it says, in 6 years, one female dog can produce 67,000 new puppies. I think that's a typo.
10,000 puppies a year, which is... how many puppies is that a week? This is COVID. 10,000 divided by 50 is not a difficult sum. 1,000 divided by 5, 200 puppies a week.
That's a lot.
I don't think that's real.
I don't think that's real. I think they've put two O's on the end of that by accident. But anyway, put them all back in the female dog, I think, is what I say. That's what brute force
like means. Some disgusting Christmas dinner.
But that's not what brute force means. It literally means killing them on the spot, I think, is what this means. That's what it is.
Oh, that's not funny.
Oh, no, that isn't funny, no. But that's that's what they did in the 70s. However, nowadays, it's more about control and reproduction, education on responsible ownership and animal registration.
For a second, I thought you were going to say education on reproduction for the dogs. I'm trying to teach a dog to put on a condom.
I think
instead of a banana, it's a big bone.
Oh God, that sounds again another mental image I'm not going to get out of my head.
You're welcome.
Thank you. So that was some methods. There is things like putting chips in them or tiny tattoos under the fur to track them as well, is another thing which has been tried in the past. I'm now going to try and speak Spanish again, which I had problems with before.
Here we go.
In Spain, the Ministry of Health introduced "Sé un dueño responsable," which means that was pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Which means be a responsible owner. So it was an education program that worked in Spain because they had a lot of stray dogs as a way of, because one of the big problems is that humans get dogs and then it's that dog for Christmas idea, then they get bored of it, or they can't afford it, or they can't train it. It becomes a bit more violent and then they just put it on the street. So they're trying to educate people in this way to try and have domesticated dogs stay with the family. That legislation exists in Spain. It doesn't in Mexico, however, where it is the highest amount of stray dogs. And just to give you a statistic here, there are 16 million stray dogs in Mexico, which is the biggest stray dog population.
That's a lot of stray dogs. Mm. 16 million.
It's loads.
That's like the population of London plus a couple of the outlying counties.
Yeah, it's huge. Absolutely massive. It's it's insane amount of, and the population of Mexico is 64 million. So it's, the ratio of human to dog is pretty close, actually.
Yeah, 4-1.
Yeah, 4-1.
Not bad.
But yeah, one of the things that Mexico are trying to do instead, however, is they've made it illegal to have backyard dog breeders. So there are no unregulated dogs going around. That's one thing they're trying to do. But actually the most successful way, which has seen a positive impact in Asian nations, is sterilization. And that's the one that they seem to be going with at the moment. But overall, just to conclude this, when you have a human to dog population of 5-1, in Mexico, or 4-1 in Mexico, it's no surprise when you see man's best friend sneak into the stadium and have a stray dog running around. And that's how we get back to the loop at the start.
There we go. Yeah. And the weird thing is, going back to the start, for some reason, it had never occurred to me that there are stray dogs running on the pitch. But of course they are, because who brings their pet to a sports match in order to let it loose on the pitch like a furry streaker?
Exactly.
What kind of a mentalist would do that?
But it's
so...
It makes total sense. And it's like, for example, because in England we had in the Liverpool match where a cat just ran on the pitch. It's the same idea, really, but it's just a stray dog who's managed to find its way into the stadium. So,
you get that occasionally in baseball games, actually. Like, it seems to be at least once a season where you get a cat on the pitch or a squirrel on the pitch. And because a baseball diamond is so enormous, you end up with several, normally quite portly, very unfit security guards chasing this cat who just runs riot for about 20 minutes, which is far more entertaining than the actual sport itself, of course.
Everyone loves a dog on the pitch. It's so fun. And on that note, actually, I'm going to play a song now, Will, about dogs running on football pitches. So I think you'll enjoy this.
You've written a song for the occasion as well. How nice.
No, I've just found one, but it's something I probably could have written as well, to be fair. Here it is.
Too fast, 'cause the drivers are slow, Joyride boy died, nothing to myself. From Magdalene to Sellafield, the scant regard for how we feel. Sheep are green, dead roses too. I know it sounds bleak, but hey, don't despair. 'Cause even men with steel hearts love to see a dog on the pitch. Even men with steel hearts love to see a dog on the pitch. Generates a warmth around the ground that augurs well for my kind.
So, Will, I actually had a theme for all of my facts today, so I'm pretty pleased about what I've managed to achieve.
Congratulations. Have a biscuit.
The fate of dog biscuit, that made me.
There you go, dog biscuit, exactly. Yeah.
But did we ever come to the conclusion, 51 tons of poo or a million chickens?
I think I'm going to go for the chickens. Yeah, I could figure out some kind of dealership scheme where I ship them off to other people who want a chicken.
Excellent. I think I'm going to agree with you on that one. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. And of course, you can contact us on our Twitter account, which is at Gaps Podcast. And you can also find us on YouTube. Just search Gaps in Knowledge Podcast.
And if you have an idea for something that could be interesting for us to look into, then please do get in touch with us through the email as well, which is gapsinknowledge@outlook.com. And you can find us on Facebook if you just search for Gaps in Knowledge.
Okay. And I just want to say there is a website in production as well. I'd like to thank Tom for putting that together, and we will give you more information when that becomes available. I think that's it, Will.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, have a lovely fortnight, everyone, and we'll talk to you in August.
Yeah, see you then. Bye-bye.
Ta-ra.
But it's Guam. Wait there. So Guam is a I can't do this bit. My
brain. Are you drowning in spiders?
I think I am. My God. I can't read this sentence. Okay.